check the tide chart. I really wanted to have Dean with his big flathead up there, but I couldn't find the photo. Looks like him, Dean says. Fishermen check the tide charts. I think you've got to go at certain times. I thought it was at high tide, but then stuff I read on the internet said, no, in a running tide. And I thought, oh, that's confused me. So I have no idea. I'll defer to Andrew, who I'm sure is an expert in these things. In the middle there is a famous flower called the Titan Arum. And it, when it flowers, people get excited and queue up for ages to go and see this amazing thing in the botanical gardens. I'm told it smells like rotting flesh. So wonderful, queue up for that experience. Oh, does it? Okay. Corpse flower. Yes, yes, which relates to its smell. That's great. Well, I feel like I've just turned this whole sort of thing into like a biology talk or something. Stock markets. People check up on things in the stock markets, and those are things that people respond to at different when they see different indicators. I have no idea in that area of things. Someone who's an economist would know more about that than me. There are some things you simply can't miss out on, or you miss out on them forever. And that's a really important thought for us to have in our minds this morning. Back in October 24, the comet C/2023A3 Tsuchinshan Atlas, which sounds like one of Elon Musk's children when I think about it, that comet was visible in the night sky, and it won't be back for another 80,000 years. You can still see it with binoculars if you want to see it, I'm told. So don't miss out on that, because if you miss it this time, it's gone. Well, the reason I'm talking about key moments in history is because Jesus mentions a very urgent moment that was badly missed by the citizens of Jerusalem. And his words convey just how deeply tragic that miss was. The whole passage arrives at this point, so we're going to go straight to the end of this passage in order to see the significance of that miss and then work our way through the passage with that in mind, because I thought that that was really important to have that tragedy at the end in mind. So let me put up Luke chapter 19, verses 43 to 44. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because, here's the important part of how they got there, because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. And that very last cause is the problem that this passage addresses. Because what they need is an awareness of Jesus' presence and person. And they didn't have it. They didn't recognize the time of God's coming to them. And as a result, they're facing the judgment of God ahead of them. Some passages have this as, because you didn't recognize the day of your visitation, the day that Jesus came to visit. And the point is that they didn't recognize the significance of this time with Jesus before them. It's the whole point of where this goes in a nutshell. So clear perceptions of Jesus, driving right responses to him, is everything in this passage. Well, you might think, well, what happened, having missed that so badly, what happened the next day in Jerusalem? Not too much. Life went on. So you might think, well, what's the point? What's the problem? And it's just this. First of all, just round the corner in AD 70, Jerusalem was going to be smashed by the Romans. They would build embankments. They would encircle them. They truly would be hemmed in on every side. It was a terrible time to be in Jerusalem. Historians talk about a mother cooking her own child in that siege. It was terrible. The temple was flattened. No stone was left standing on another. It was gruesome. It was devastating. But that's actually only a small part of it. You see, the real issue was that individuals in Jerusalem were choosing pathways that ignored the significance of Jesus in their life. And beyond Jerusalem AD 70 was God's judgment, is God's judgment day, which will be far worse than the siege of Jerusalem. There's a sobering thought, but that's the point. This is a sobering message for us to take seriously. In a nutshell, the problem is living without the significance of who Jesus is right there before you. I've gone to the end of the passage to put that before us so that as we walk through the passage, that's before us. So we've got that in mind. Well, immediately before this passage, we're going to walk our way through the passage now. Immediately before this passage, Jesus is telling the parable of the 10 minas or the 10 talents. And he gets to a conclusion at the end of verse 27 about people, the enemies of the kingdom, who did not want the king in that story to be ruler over them. See, we're getting now to the idea of Jesus as a king, as a ruler over people. And that's an important part of the context as we go into this passage. That's the verse immediately before us, before this passage. And I know that we're meant to have that in our mind because in the very next verse, Luke says in verse 28, having trouble speaking this morning, after Jesus had said this, in other words, with this in mind, he then proceeds to talk about Jesus going on ahead up into Jerusalem. And the question now becomes, how will Jerusalem respond to him as king? You see, it's a good setup this morning. If you wanted an AFL banner for Jesus coming into Jerusalem, I reckon it's Jesus is king. Jesus is the king. He's the one you can't ignore. Jesus, he is the king. Just to repeat the words of a Colin Buchanan song. So in verses 29 to 36, preparations are made for Jesus' entry. It's as he enters the village of Bethphage and Bethany that mention is made of a colt that two of the disciples are sent to retrieve. There's this curious dialogue prepared for them for how they should respond to the owner if he turns up. Verses 31 and verses 34 tell us that they're meant to say, the Lord needs it, if they're questioned by the owner. And so that's what happens. There's at least someone who owns a colt in the outside villages of Jerusalem who recognizes the authority of Jesus and surrenders their colt to him. That's the starting point in our passage. Someone, some unknown person, not even mentioned what his name is, knows the significance of who Jesus is and has responded. Was that a miraculous event or just simply organization up front? We don't know. It's not really the point. The point is they responded to Jesus, to his authority. In verse 35, the disciples put their cloaks on the colt and put Jesus on it, and as he proceeds, people spread their cloaks on the road. And so you can see that Jesus is given an honored position. In John 12, we read about a crowd that's in Jerusalem for the festival, waving palm branches as they go to meet him. That's why we call it Palm Sunday. And palms seem to have been used in a celebratory way in the Festival of Booths, but they were also used in victory celebrations of rulers of the time as well. It's clear that it's a celebration, a welcoming of who Jesus is as he comes to Jerusalem. And the manner of this procession on a colt is the fulfillment of a prophecy in Zechariah 9:9 that I've put there about a king coming on a colt. So you have a king coming and a joyful response to that king coming, and the words that the people use come from Psalm 118, verse 26. Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Hear what they're calling Jesus. Blessed is the king, because that's what's being put before us. This is the king whose authority we need to recognize. Luke says they call out because of all the miracles they had seen, because of the things that Jesus had done. They recognized who he was through the things that he had done. It's not a response that will last. I saw a sermon online and it was called King for a Day. But it gives us a sense of what a positive response to Jesus as King looks like. Well, that's the positive responses, but there are those who don't appreciate Jesus being named as King as well. In verse 19, the Pharisees challenge Jesus about what's happening. Their response is to call Jesus to rebuke his disciples. Hey, stop what you're doing. Tell your disciples off. And Jesus answers in verse 40 and says something very simple and very profound that makes it super clear that he's very comfortable with the title of King. And that's an important part of it as well. Jesus accepts that title on himself. It's a really big moment. It's easy to walk past that quickly. But Jesus is saying, he is the King. He really is the King you can't ignore. I think we're meant to sit up and take notice of that simple line a whole lot. And it slips past us quick. So I want us to see just how important that is. What remains from our passage is the response of Jesus towards his rejection by the city of Jerusalem that's coming. It's a really sobering thing. In verse 41, we hear that as Jesus approached the city of Jerusalem, as he saw it, he wept over it. I think there's only two places where Jesus weeps. When Lazarus died, and here. And it's a really big response. There's so much from Jesus' side in what he says there and in his actions in weeping. In verse 42, we hear Jesus' words. If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace. Those words are really haunting words. They're haunting in the connection, the personal connection with the people that it's directed towards. The passion of God for his people throughout the years hangs in those words. It is so ironic and so tragic that Jerusalem, whose name means City of Peace, Luke mentioned that before, it's so ironic that Jerusalem, whose name means City of Peace, doesn't know the things for peace when the Prince of Peace comes to visit. Which leads me to ask, what would have brought them peace? And of course, it goes to the problem of the passage. In its context, surely it would be to receive Jesus as King well. That's what's happening in the context of this passage. In recognizing his authority to rule over them, that would have been the things for peace. But they've missed their moment to do that. That's a really chilling thought, don't you think? Part of me just steps back from this moment. Jesus weeps over them. But he also moves towards judgment as well. He says that the things for peace are now hidden from their eyes. I find that really confronting. They haven't died. Their life's not over. And yet he's saying that it's hidden from them. There is something about responses in this moment that matter. And that confronts me with the reality of responding to him in this moment. Not leaving it till the end, because you don't want to be in this position. It means that in these moments, right here and now, there is the confronting reality of needing to respond well to the authority of King Jesus over your life. And not just be casual and let it go on without that response to him. Well, here's where we get back to verses 43 to 44. The days will come. You know, if you know Amos and Jeremiah, you know that those words are all through the prophets. Days are coming is a phrase that's all through those books. The days will come when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. This passage has been about the response that people make to Jesus as King when he comes to them. It warns us about the appalling tragedy of not perceiving rightly who Jesus is when his presence is at your door. And where this gets real for us is when you're sitting on the fence with faith, or living life on pause with regard to who Jesus is. I see this when people are still working out their faith positions, but they're keeping Jesus at arm's length as they do that. They might have come a little way down the journey of faith, but there's something that stopped them going further. Perhaps they're not willing to give up life lived the way they are living it currently. Perhaps life's just comfortable. Perhaps they're waiting for a moment, but I don't really know what that moment might be that's bigger than Jesus at your doorstep. And the problem is that the authority in their life simply isn't given over to King Jesus. Instead, it's kept tightly owned by self. It's like a defense mechanism that doesn't want to let go of what we've got, even when what we've got is a poor second compared to knowing Jesus and the blessings of the kingdom. And the end result is that the authority in their life doesn't go to Jesus. It's two ways to live. You either live with Jesus as king, or you live with yourself as king, and there are no other alternatives. There isn't a position of sitting on the fence. It's one of these two positions. And part of this passage is to remind us that time stops for no one. Each person is responsible for their own response to Jesus. And it would be a terrible tragedy to miss the day of visitation. The day when you're confronted with the truth about Jesus' right to rule your life, that he really holds that authority over you. So don't let life get away from you without confronting that reality head on. Don't let that just walk past you. Don't let it slip by. You know, that's kind of a proud way to live, because it refuses to recognize where authority truly lies, and it holds self above God, above God's authority, which is quite a statement. We're going into Easter, and Easter shows us how far God will go for you out of great love, because God's authority isn't a terrible thing. It's not the authority of a terrible dictator. It's the exact opposite. It's come to me, all you who are weary, and you will find rest. He's that kind of a king. It's the place where your life finds its ultimate expression and joy. Psalm 16:11, in his presence is fullness of joy. And on Good Friday, we're going to meet the two thieves on the cross, and we're going to be confronted once again with two ways to live, two ways to respond to Jesus. One ends with peace with God, one ends with Jesus' tears, just like over Jerusalem. It's a tragic ending, but it doesn't have to be that way. So don't let the day of visitation slip you by. Don't let Jesus' authority. Go pasture. Let me pray for you now. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would be at work in our hearts and minds to really confront us, actually, about the way we might live life without you as the authority in our lives. Lord, please speak to us and work in us and change us and mold us and help us to see the truth, not as the world around us tells us it is, because the world around us changes. Help us to see what doesn't change, and that is that ultimate authority lies with Jesus. And this world and all that we know will pass away, but your word and your authority will remain unchanged. That's hard to see sometimes in the flow of everyday life, but it's so important that we don't let these things go past us. So I pray that in each and everyone's heart here, there would be a response to King Jesus that recognizes his authority, that welcomes him to take that place, that rightful place over us, that surrenders our own will and desires and sees that there's actually not a future there. But Father, I pray also that there would be great joy in your presence from recognizing you as the ultimate King. And I pray this for your glory. Amen.